This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 154.
The unspoken expectation is, what do you really want from this relationship? We spend a lot of time talking about, what are your goals? What are you going to accomplish this year? But what we never do is talk about, what do you really want from this relationship? And that's actually the number one factor that we have is relationship alignment. You need to establish what you want out of this relationship. And I know that sounds really touchy-feely, but the reality of the situation is both bosses and employees are coming into this relationship with unspoken expectations. When we talk to employees and bosses, they all have things like, I hope my boss actually cares about my growth, not just about my output. Or even basic things like, you know what I would love to do is go out to lunch with my boss. By the way, we see this in marriages, we see this in relationships. Most of us would never enter into a marriage without really identifying, do you want kids with this person? Do you have the same money values as this person? The same like philosophies on life with this person? And it's similar to the boss employee. You really have to figure out like, what do you want from this relationship? And that's the unspoken contract.
How can employees and bosses have honest conversations about what they want and need in their relationship? Why do employees have less than 30 days to build trust in the boss-employee relationship? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Since launching the Future of HR podcast in late 2022, I've been fortunate to have meaningful conversations with over 150 HR thought leaders and world-class CHROs from around the globe. These conversations have given me a unique perspective on where HR is today and where we're heading in the future. And because of this vantage point, over the past year, I have had the privilege and opportunity to be a keynote speaker at 16 internal HR conferences for Fortune 500 companies like Kohler, AbbVie, Corning, Nike, LabCorp, and more. And what am I talking about? More often than not, I'm asked to give my signature talk, Future-Proofing HR, Creating Value by Unlocking the Capabilities of Tomorrow, which is designed to help your HR team shift their mindset from being a strategic business partner to a value creator. And these aren't just presentations, they're interactive sessions that equip your HR leaders with practical frameworks to challenge conventional thinking and move beyond the traditional HR playbook. If you're planning your next HR conference, career week, or leadership gathering and want to provide your team with insights that drive immediate impact, I'd love to connect and explore how I might help make your event a big success. Feel free to reach out to me at jp@futureofhr.com to start the conversation. And with that, my guests this week are the hosts of the podcast, your work friends, Francesca Ranieri and Mel Plett. Francesca is the founder of Frank, a brand clarity studio that helps internal teams from Fortune 500 companies to high growth startups get clear on their people strategy and internal brand so they can be seen, heard, and funded. With over 20 years of experience working for companies like Nike and Deloitte, Francesca learned firsthand what happens when an organization is clear about who they are and why folks should work with them. Mel is a fractional CPO, talent strategist, coach, consultant, and founder of Cordelia Consulting, where she partners with individuals and teams through customized workshops, coaching, and people strategy. With over 20 years of HR and talent management experience, Mel focuses on developing a human-centered approach to each project and engagement. And together, Francesca and Mel, who are actual work friends, host the podcast, Your Work Friends, where they have candid conversations with leading practitioners, and they help to make sense of what's happening at work in a way that's honest, funny, and practical. And I've been following Francesca and Mel's journey for some time now, and when I reached out to them to be on the podcast, they asked if I would come and be a guest on Your Work Friends. I, of course, said yes. So we decided to host each other, and this week you can find my interview with Your Work Friends on your favorite podcasting platform. It was a lot of fun to be on Your Work Friends, and we covered a lot of ground, especially in their quick-fire question segment. So I highly recommend you tune in to find out what I said and join in the fun for yourself. And it was also a pleasure to spend time and learn from Francesca and Mel as we discussed how their friendship grew into Your Work Friends, a consulting business and podcast, why your boss relationship might matter more than your marriage, why common myths about boss-employee relationships miss what workers and managers really want, what the 30-day cliff is and why it matters, and how to create a people strategy that has impact and results in changes employees can feel. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Mel and Francesca. Francesca, Mel, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you both?
Doing well. How are you? Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm excited to have you both on the podcast. Excited that we're actually doing a dual episode. So if you're listening to this now, that means you are actually on my podcast, The Future of HR, where if you go to Your Work Friends, you can actually hear my interview. So you've got two podcasts to listen to this week, folks. But Francesca and Mel, you call yourself Your Work Friends, which I love. Can you tell us a little more about how your friendship turned into a strategy consulting business, a podcast, and ultimately this mission to fix the boss-employee relationship?
Yeah. So Francesca and I have worked together for a long time. We met each other while we were at Deloitte. We separated and went on different paths and then found ourselves back working together, a big accounting firm. Then we both decided to go on a sabbatical and explore what are we doing individually. And I think one of the things about she and I is we're both a little restless. We can't sit still. We like to keep our pulse on what's happening in the world of work. And we had been talking for years, probably 10 years or so, how we'd love to do that. But the environments we worked in really didn't allow us to have that freedom of speech to get out there and start something. And when we tossed around the idea of names of what we wanted to call this, we were like, well, it's your work friends. That's who you speak to about the real things you want to talk about. Our whole ethos was around, let's pull back the curtain, right? This doesn't have to be the Wizard of Oz where there's somebody hiding over there and you're trying to figure it out. This isn't a secret about how work works. And we really wanted to set people up for success in the now, but also in the future. So we really were like, let's cover the now and next together. That's our purview. Francesca, what would you add to that?
The thing that's so interesting right now, too, is we're covering the gamut of how work works. When you listen to Your Work Friends, you'll see things around like the layoff playbook and how to raise your salary, et cetera. But then we're also talking about where is work going and really trying to make sure that people are set up for where they are now and where they can go in the future. So it really covers the whole gamut of work.
One of the things I really appreciate what you've been doing is you've keyed in on this boss-employee relationship, which we all know is really critical, but you started doing some research around this and really trying to dig into like what makes a boss and employee team member relationship really work. And I'd love to know more about that, Francesca. Talk about the work you've been doing there.
As Mel said, we went on this sabbatical, which was quite fun because we started the pod, but then it also gave us a ton of time to talk to people. And we had over 300 conversations, some of them very random, some of them very intentional about how work is feeling right now. And the number one theme that kept coming back was there's something going on with my boss or there's something going on with my employee. We're like, is there a there? Because it kind of felt like there's some schmutz happening in this relationship. When you look at the research, we went out and looked at, okay, how do people just human interactions work? And when you look at relationships in general, we have three really core relationships. Of course, there's more, but it's the parental child relationship. It is the partnership, spouse, whatever you want to call it, intimate partner relationship. And then the other one that is so consequential is this boss-employee relationship. We all know the facts that, you know, your boss has more to do with your mental health and your financial health. It actually goes both ways. We have research for that. But what is the research around what makes a really good boss-employee relationship? Because that's really the fulcrum of all this. We started doing quantitative research. We did a lot of qualitative research, and now we're piloting it. And what we're finding is the healthiest relationships between boss-employees are absolute two-way street. And what's quite interesting, and then I'll pass it over to Mel, is that what bosses want and what employees want from that relationship are like remarkably similar. They want clarity. They want trust. They want fairness. And we know from historical human interaction relationships dating back to the 60s, people want a give to get relationship. And when they feel like they're getting something in return, they're going to give more. What we're doing right now is really focusing on how does that fit within that boss employee paradigm. Mal, what would you add to that?
The one thing I would add in some of the research that we were doing that was super interesting was the concept of corporate citizenship behaviors. When a team is that relationship's really healthy, it helps a leader succeed, right? Which is not rocket science. We all know that. Your success is my success is your success. But there's actual proof that corporate citizenship behaviors actually will denigrate if this relationship is broken. It just breaks down and it becomes worse. That impacts the leader's ability to do their job. And then it just becomes now the team can't do their job. And it becomes this vicious cycle of people not being set up for success. We think focusing on this relationship will repair a lot of workplace problems.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully you have like one significant spouse throughout your lifetime. Maybe you stay married or have a very long-term relationship. But boss relationships, I just talked to a friend of mine. It's his third boss in this year.
This year.
We're like in August. So this is unreal, right? And I think we've all had situations where we're at a company and we've had multiple bosses. So it's hard to kind of really build a deep relationship there. But what you're talking about, this idea of what I give and what I get, it's really around employee value proposition. It's the idea that an employee value exchange. So we talk about employee value propositions, the marketing piece of like, hey, we're going to give you this and you'll kind of get this. But what really happens is that value exchange. And people will say, hey, am I getting what I'm putting into this job? Is it worth it all in? And if it is, I stay. And if it's not, we start to look. What I think what you guys are doing, which is great, that's a high level view, is you're trying to say, what does that look like from a boss-employee relationship? And how do you get clearer on that? Which there's a lot of stuff out there, but I'm not sure we've gotten there yet. So I am curious, as you've done this research, like what's the biggest myth about the boss-employee relationship that you just debunked or stuff we're just not getting right?
Well, there were really three big things that we identified. One, the two-way street. This is an absolute two-way street. That's not to negate the power dynamic of a leader and recognizing that. That's one thing. The other thing is that there's this unspoken contract. People are missing out on one really important question that they need to be asking right up front to establish success. And the other is that you have time. And I know we're going to talk about that, JP, with the 30-day cliff, but there's this myth that you have time to fix it, and you don't. So there were these three big insights that came out of that.
That's good. You got me really excited about what was the question I need to ask? What am I need to think about in those early relationships? Can't leave a cliffhanger like that for us there, Mel.
Yeah. Well, Francesca, go ahead.
The unspoken expectation is, what do you really want from this relationship? We spend a lot of time talking about, what are your goals? What are you going to accomplish this year? But what we never do is talk about, what do you really want from this relationship? And that's actually the number one factor that we have is relationship alignment. You need to establish what you want out of this relationship. And I know that sounds really touchy-feely, but the reality of the situation is both bosses and employees are coming into this relationship with unspoken expectations. When we talk to employees and bosses, they all have things like, I hope my boss actually cares about my growth, not just about my output. Or a boss will say, I really hope they understand that I really give a shit about them. Or even basic things like, you know what I would love to do is go out to lunch with my boss. And it's these little things. By the way, we see this in marriages. We see this in relationships. I really just want them to why. Or, for example, the other flip of that is most of us would never enter into a marriage without really identifying, do you want kids with this person? Do you have the same money values as this person? The same like philosophies on life with this person? And it's similar to the boss employee. You really have to figure out, like, what do you want from this relationship? And that's the unspoken contract. And there are very simple questions you can ask to unearth that are HR compliant and feel very comfortable. But it's that. It's really that. Like, let's be honest about what we really want out of it. Otherwise, we're going to go through this whole relationship with unmet needs.
We spend 90,000 hours at work in our lifetime. And we spend more hours with our boss than we do with our family or significant other every single week. When you think about the amount of time you spend with that person. That impacts so much about who you are personally and professionally. There's a lot of value in making sure this relationship is healthy.
Yeah. And one of the big challenges from a boss perspective is that I don't get to pick my boss. Now, sometimes they get to pick the team members, but you might be, hey, I have a new boss, this new company. How do I make it work? So I think that's where these questions come up, and hopefully we'll get into that as we talk through this. Like, what does that really look like? Because people need those tools to have those conversations. And it's more and really beyond just saying, what does success look like for you in this role? How can I help you be successful? Right? Those are very generic. They don't get to the core of the emotional piece. I want to feel like you care. I want to feel like I could succeed for you. I want to work extra hard for you. I know it matters.
I want to trust you.
Trust you. Thank you. Exactly.
That's the thing. And it's not to say that you have to establish what success looks like. We're not saying at all, like, all that stuff we've talked about in the boss-employee relationship before doesn't matter. It absolutely does. But unless you unearth this relationship aspect, all of that might be on shaky ground.
You're making me think back, and hopefully a lot of our listeners are thinking the same way. Like, okay, let's think about some of the boss relationships I had. And the really good ones, did you have some of these up front? Did you have that trust? Were you able to be real with each other to understand what's really going on? And I think that's a big difference. But you guys have developed really out of this research and 300 plus interviews, something called the reciprocal work formula, which sounds pretty exciting because I love formulas. But walk us through what this means in practice. Like, what's this look like?
It's a stack. It's literally a stack, a pyramid, if you will. And you have to do one before the other. So there's that aspect of it. 5 steps. We've tried to make this really simple. Absolutely research-based and totally doable in macro and in a one-on-one, because Mel and I like things that are simple and doable. And quite honestly, we've been there, like you, JP, we've been there, done that, bought a ton of leadership development, and we're trying to do, this is absolutely something that will work, research-based, executable. Okay, here we go. Factor one is you need to establish what the relationship is. That's the relationship alignment piece, to really understand what each other wants from the relationship. Number one. And you need to be able to check in on that periodically too, right? Number two is, what does success look like? I'm not talking about what goals look like for the year. Use your goal in your performance management process for that. I'm talking about, what does success look like to you this year for this role, both employee and boss? And you need to understand that in order to really move together throughout the year. For doing that, then we need to make sure that we're feedback flowing constantly too, right? And we know this, feedback's incredibly important, but checking in on the relationship, checking in on those success factors, making sure that we're having this constant dialogue throughout the year for, and this is going to be, feel very relationshipy, but it's very intentional. And if you're married like I am, you know how important this is you have to recognize what's working, calling out when you're feeling like this is working super duper well, or this is where I'm feeling really, really good about this, or this is where I see that you're really supporting me in my success. So we're recognizing what's working. And the last is that we're supporting growth. And this is where, how are we really supporting each other and where each other wants to go now and in the future? And you can see how this can be a relationship setting meeting. It could be a one-on-one. It can be those things that we constantly sweat throughout the year.
Mel, you want to add anything to that?
Those are the core things that came out of every conversation. And it sounds really simple, but that's on purpose. We need to get back to some basic things. There's a lot of, I always call it the shiny toy object. It's like, oh, we need this new program and it's so exciting, but it really comes down to these simple things and just getting back to these basics. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I agree with you both on this. And I think it's simple, but it takes courage. It takes a leader who's open to having a different kind of conversation, be more vulnerable to really ask that question and care enough to ask that question. And then for the team member side, you've got to actually be like, hey, I want to take ownership of this relationship with you. I want you to be successful, but I also need you to know what I expect and what I want out of this relationship. And I think it does change the game. And I've had Peter Block on the podcast, and he's Peter Blocked me. On that podcast, it's been a while, but one of the questions he asks is, how do you feel about working with me? Which is a weird question in some ways. We're not used to asking those questions. Like, what do you mean? Well, how do you feel about working with me? Kind of gets the idea of like the trust piece. Like, how do you really feel about it? And if people are missing deadlines or you're not sure they're going to can do the job, then that trust is a really challenging area, right? But assuming people are doing really good work, and they're being open and honest, then I think you can really build this reciprocal relationship. So I love your questions around that. And I love how you're kind of building that pyramid, because we shouldn't overthink this. This is one-on-one. These are like, it's building trust. but it's much more about what I'm hearing you say is be candid, be explicit, and call out the parts that's not being said in the relationship.
And I would argue our version of that Peter Block question would be probably a really simple question, which would be, what do you want to feel like at work this year? And the reality of the situation is, the reason why is A, what do you want to feel? I want to understand how you want to feel at work. And then from a boss or an employee, what can I be doing to support you in feeling like that? And that's the flip of that question, because if both of us look at this as a mutual relationship and we both know what each other wants to feel, then that sets us up for a really solid path towards that reciprocal work formula.
Yeah, I love that. Because you asked that question, I want to feel successful. The follow-up question would be, what does success feel like for you? And then you start to dig into like, what can we make sure happens in both ways? And make sure the boss also says, hey, this is what I need, because there's pressures that I have. There is a power dynamic there, right? So it's got to be a two-way street, but one of those streets probably has a little bit more power in general in terms of what can happen in that person's career. Is that fair?
Yeah, 100%. Like, we know that there's a power dynamic with leadership, but that's the privilege of leadership, right? Is taking care of others. And that's that trust building piece, the fact that they do have that power to influence someone's career. So I think when you're establishing up front that relationship and showing that care and need for each other right away, then I think that's where leaders can do their best work to really support people and build that trust for their people.
I've seen some employees make their boss's life a living hell. If we think that employees don't have any power in this situation, going back to the civility exchange that Mel talked about, that's not true. An employee can go to HR on a boss. An employee can absolutely sabotage a boss as well. And so I'm not saying that the power dynamics are different, but I also think this is, if you look at this as a mutual relationship, and if you look at this in mutual power, different powers, soft power, hard power, but if you go into that mutuality, understanding that both of us could make our lives wonderful or both of us could take each other down, that's a reality.
Yeah. It's a two-way street. You have typically the manager, that leader needs the team to help get the work done. Their career success is dependent on having a great team. So that absolutely can happen. And hopefully you don't go nuclear down that way. That's not a fun path. But I hear what you're saying.
Not advocating for that. But it's also like to say that an employee has no power over a boss. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, that's fair. I wasn't trying to say no power. But I think there's a power dynamic of, do I care as much about what you need as what I need? And my experience, and I think a lot of people's experience, is that the bosses care more about their needs. We're really pretty egocentric in general. Than their employees' needs. I need this report by this Tuesday. I need this done here. This is my expectations. These are my demands. Now, the best bosses do all that while making sure the team feels very cared about. But there are some bosses that are more takers than givers. And depending on the situation, you may or may not be able to change that.
They're going to get what they give.
Yeah.
Just to put it out there, it'd be interesting to meet a boss who does approach the work that way. Are they actually getting the best output from their team with that approach? I bet they aren't.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think we would say that for a lot of the HR perspective would believe that. I don't know if those leaders would believe it because that might be the way they operate. But one of the challenges besides, there are some bad bosses out there, but most bosses are good people trying to make things work in tough situations. So I don't think there's a lot of like really bad bosses out there. That's their entire job. But when you hear the term reciprocal, do you have any pushback from leaders or managers that say, well, that seems like I'm giving up some authority or power, maybe have that more command and control? Like, how would you respond to that? Who someone says, reciprocal, what does that mean?
That never came up once in any of our conversations with the bosses that we interviewed. That was not a question, because I think the majority of them want a partnership. That's what we heard. They want that trust and that partnership. That was the pretty common theme throughout every discussion, is between the boss and the employee. They all have these common, I want it to be this. I want to feel like there's trust. I want to feel like you have my back. I want to feel like I can come to you with anything from both sides and we're going to support each other through it. The majority, thankfully, of people that we met with, because command and control feels like a pretty antiquated approach to leadership, and anyone still operating in that way, I doubt they're getting the outcomes that they need to get in that environment. But that didn't come up at all.
The reframe is that this isn't about authority. This is about care. And I think if you can reframe it as not giving up your power, but looking at building something that's mutual, that's where the real power is. Because when you do that, you build what's called discretionary effort. And what we found is, just to pull some stats out there, when both bosses and employees feel like they're in that mutual space, they're giving and getting, we're hitting that, for lack of a better term, sweet spot, performance can improve up to 61%. 61%. Because they feel like they're giving what they get. They feel like they're getting valued. They have that trust. On the flip side, when they feel like I am giving and I am not getting, your boss and your employee are going to basically only show up at 75% capacity. And you feel that, you know that when you're like, you know what? I'm going to do my job and I'm not going to do anything else. We hear that all the time. Well, it's showing up in the data. If you can reframe to this mutuality, you're not only going to get better performance, but you're going to get a better, honestly, just a better feeling and better juju all the way around. Not to go super woo-woo, but the data supports it. That reframe of mutual supports it. And it's easy to do. So why not just do it?
All right. Well, if the juju and the woo-woo support it.
Yeah.
The data, we gotta go. We gotta go with it.
Set it and forget it. The juju and the woo.
Set it and forget it. Yeah, don't steal that. That's our book coming out later. Okay, so let's talk about this 30-day cliff. So I've joined an organization and I think I've got time to build a reciprocal relationship, a trusting relationship. Do I really have much time?
You don't.
No.
In our quantitative and our qualitative data, we went out and asked this question. How long are you willing to give without getting anything in return, whether you're a boss or an employee? How long? Most people, when we ask them that question, the average, it's not 2 years, it's not 1 year, it's not 90 days, it's 30 days that I need to see or feel some longitudinal reciprocity in this relationship before I start checking out. And I'm checking out with engagement first, then I'm checking out with trust, and then I'm checking out with performance. A little even more fun fact, how long do you think it is for individual contributors there, JP?
I don't know. It's got to be less than 30 now.
It is less than 30.
I'm playing the game right. I'll take a dollar when the price is right.
$1, Bob. Yeah. It's a week.
A week. Wow.
A week. When you think about like things like onboarding programs, ruh-roh.
I think that's fair because we give ourselves more benefit of the doubt. If we're coming new in, we're like, well, I'm new. It's going to take me a little while. Hopefully I'm getting some good results or making some good relationships. But yeah, maybe we get to day 60 and we realize we actually haven't delivered for our boss. We haven't built a reciprocal relationship. We haven't maybe done the effort, or we've had some, maybe things didn't go perfectly. You think you can recover? You probably can't. It's a fair point in those situations. So 30 days is really important.
Both sides.
We do think you can recover, by the way. It just, you have to have this reset. You have to go back to having the conversation. And you have to prioritize it.
That's why some of you guys have been thinking about, how do you build this? How do you get this 30 days? How do you really build a reciprocal trusting relationship in 30 days? Is part of what you guys have been working on, I know, and work with companies on a lot. So that's awesome to do that. Because I do think a lot of onboarding programs are built with a 90-day, six-month window, whatever ramp. And we know that's just not realistic.
But it doesn't take much to just embed little pieces of the formula into your onboarding program for both bosses and for both employees. Again, it's a two-way street, not a wholesale reset, but pieces that really absolutely need to be there.
The work you guys do is not just about relationships and building a reciprocal work relationships. You also work with organizations to give a really clear roadmap and create amazing workplaces and really help them get clear, compelling, and actionable HR strategies that get results. And you guys do this a lot of different ways. And so I want to make sure we talk a little bit about this, because I think your offerings are, not only they're fun names, but they're really unique in terms of what you do. Because what you guys are getting with your work friends coming in is practitioners who've done it, but also see the world in a very pragmatic and actionable way. So one of your offers, I guess, let me start here, has cool names like Clarity Labs, Signals Report, Pathfinder, and Alignment Labs. Tell us more about your offerings and the work you guys do.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Francesca and I have worked on strategies throughout our career. at big organizations. I've been at KPMG and Deloitte with Francesca, then at Deloitte, with Nike. I worked in big law, but a common red thread for both of us has always been strategy work. And one of the common things that we identified with the people that we work with is there's kind of these four key areas where you're jumping in strategy. You're either diagnosing something, you're exploring something new, you're needing to choose a path and get going. You need to move. We really feel like our concept of your work friends is coming in and being a partner with someone to meet them where they are, to help them through where they are in their strategy process. So on clarity, you need to understand what's even really happening here right now. What question are we trying to answer? What problem are we trying to solve? Are we solving the right problem? That's about clarity. When it comes to signals, we're trying to diagnose what's really happening. What are the trends pulling out? What are the things you're not seeing? Really diving deep into the weeds and what their information is, what's happening in external, internal, and helping identify what's the what. Pathfinder is getting to, and I'm going to use Francesca, your words, because I love them so much. As she always says, these three moats, what are those three clear strategic paths that are your choices? Which direction can you go? And then on alignment, the hardest part of strategy work is getting everyone on board. We've all been in those meetings where it's a roadshow, but it isn't about a deck. This isn't about going through a deck. We need to activate teams and activate change. So when it comes to alignment labs, that's really presenting everything all in one and trying to get everyone on board and reshaping to make sure that the path forward is clear. The last thing that we have, JP, that is what we call the whole damn play. Coming in and doing the whole playbook with you by your side as a partnership. Francesca, what would you add?
I think strat's just one of the most important things you can have as a leader. It's not only a decision-making compass, but it's just a rallying cry for your team. And it makes it just so much better to do the work and actually get the work done that adds business value. I feel like a lot of folks don't do strat. I see a lot of organizations, they have a plan-ish. They have a list-ish. They have the kind of sort of priorities. But what they don't have is the really clear strat that is tied to the business that they can basically say, this is what we're doing. This is how we're doing it. And then if something comes up, because everything always comes up, the shiny ball, if you will, that comes up every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, especially in HR, they can say, great, what comes off the plate so we can do that? It's almost like a defense shield for them as well. Things like strat to me are just so important, especially for HR organizations to really make good on the employee value promise that you've had. Because without it, people aren't really able to feel what you're trying to do in the organization. And at the end of the day, you really need to nail like the three big things for people to feel it and stick to the frickin' plan. That's incredibly hard to do, but we want to get you on the road to doing that.
Yeah, we are supporting the business. So business strategy should be our North Star, what we have to do and what we want to focus on. But then to translate that to an HR people strategy that actually adds value is where I think people can fall down. But I'm curious, what are some of the common challenges that you guys get called with from HR teams, et cetera, around, hey, we think we need more insight into our signals. We need more clarity. What's that look like?
Yeah, it really runs the gamut from a spectrum of, we're working right now with a large multi-billion dollar organization. They're looking at quite literally, how do we need to position our people strategy for the next 5 years? We're doing that work. They're in an organization that is going to be massively impacted by AI. And so it's, how does this look? How does this feel? What are the big bets we're going to have? And how are we going to run the play? So we do that work all the way to working with a small million-dollar organization that's trying to figure out, we want to scale from $1 million to $20 million in the next 5 years. How do we do that? And so we're taking them through the whole damn play to make sure that they can do that. We run the gamut. The thing with Mel and I, we'd love to do that, even if we didn't get paid. Honestly, one of the biggest things is dump a big purse out and let us figure out what are the signals. Doing puzzles, figuring that out, what's the signal in the noise? It's just fun for us. So we run the gamut on this spectrum.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you might like to do it and you would do it for free, but you should get paid.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We don't do it for free.
Yeah, make sure you charge. No, yeah. But I mean, I think sometimes that's what's helpful is that someone might be listening, well, why would I bring it outside? Consultant in your perspective, we could figure this out. You're working with a billion-dollar company. These are big companies. But it's the same reason why we get coaches to go play tennis, or our kids get coaches on how to swim, or whatever it happens to be. An outside perspective is really helpful. We don't always see everything the same way. And it's nice to have someone come out who's not tied to the outcomes, who's not tied to the messy politics, not tied to whatever they've done in the past, to say, hey, let me look at this and let's kind of take some fresh eyes. That is what people typically are looking for, which is interesting. I think it's amazing you guys are doing that work. And I think it's just so valuable for HR teams to have a different perspective.
What's interesting is when we're working with teams too, I think a lot of folks don't realize they're doing a lot of really amazing stuff already. Sometimes that is just unearthing what that is and leaning really freaking hard into what you're doing well and making the links to how that's going to align to your business strategy or how that's going to align to pushing you forward, right? And so I think a lot of times people think, oh, I have to do a whole full reset, or I'm really failing, or I feel like I'm behind, or I feel like I'm drowning. Most people are actually doing really wonderful things. It's just figuring out where is that? Where is that sweet spot? Where is that X factor for you? Where are your moats? And lean into it. And a lot of times people can't see that. Have you ever heard of the glass bottle theory?
No.
May I share it with you?
Of course.
Okay, here we go. So there's this theory that it's really hard to do that. It's easy to do it for other people. It's really hard to do it for yourself, because most of us are sitting, especially if we're leading an organization, that gets really deeply personal. We're thinking about it all the time. We're sitting in the middle of a glass bottle, but you're being asked to read the label on the outside and basically see what that looks like. You can't read a label on the outside of a bottle from inside the bottle. It is incredibly hard to see that for yourself. And getting outside perspectives of someone being like, oh, it's X, Y, and Z, that's where the value really comes in. And that's why most of the people I know that I work with in brand, all of us work with other people to do our own brands for the most part, because it's really freaking hard to see. It's like someone cutting your own hair. I mean, you could cut your own hair, but...
And I think the other thing too for HR leaders is that there's definitely this sort of inferiority complex that comes out. Like, we're never doing enough. We're comparing ourselves to other HR teams or whatever's bright and shiny new. But to your point, Francesca, a lot of companies are doing great work, and you're doing the work that matters right now. We need to give ourselves a little bit of a break. It's great to have an outside perspective and say, how can we get better? But to your point, there's a lot that's going well that people don't realize until they bring someone else in. So I love you guys are doing that, and it's really validating. But I did want to ask, though, for HR leaders who are working with their teams, work helping their managers and employees, how do you move from high-level strategy to actions that kind of people can feel day-to-day? When do you go from strategy to that playbook and actually get into the tactics?
Once they're ready to get into activation, I would say include them at the start of the conversation. Let them know at every stage of the strategy process where you are, what's being discussed, as much transparency as you can offer. Bring people along, because that's going to get them committed to the plan that you end up activating. You're hearing them. They might also be identifiers of blind spots that you're not seeing. For example, to Francesca's point, if you're in an ivory tower of a leadership tower, but you're not talking to your people on the ground doing the work, there might be things that you don't see. That would be my advice, that you're bringing people in the conversation for the whole journey.
Yeah. I also think that's from the people side. If you're looking at the moats that we're selecting as well, we're wanting to make sure that you've got these underpinning systems to make sure that those work, and or the roadmaps, the investments to do that. Otherwise, you actually don't have a moat. That's the thing. One of the things that you think about with a strat or even with a brand strategy, it's only as good as you can execute it. If you can't execute what you're saying you're going to do, you don't have a strat. You have a marketing strategy, right? You have a PR piece. So that's the whole thing too, is we're not going to set anybody up with moats that can't be done.
Super helpful. All right. Last question for both of you. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
I'm going to say humanity. With all the transformational change with AI, technological change is going to keep on happening, right? The world that we live in, globalization, politics, et cetera, that it's going to be more important than ever that we really lean into the humanity side of things.
Can I have two?
Sure.
Okay. One is unrecognizable. And I mean that in the best way possible. And let me support that with my second, which is I really would love for especially folks in HR or people, whatever we're calling it these days, step into your power. Full stop. Like, I don't think that there's been a bigger time, and honestly, a more exciting time to really redefine what work is, what humans do within that, how they partner with something that's synthetic or not, and to really rethink what this can be. And HR, I really get annoyed at people that dog HR, because I think HR has been uniquely qualified to do this and will continue to build their capability to do this. But if there's anybody in the organization that knows the people and knows what the people are capable of, it's HR. And so, like, step into that so freaking hard. Own it, please God. Hot girl in glasses analogy from the teen movies in the 90s, take them off. Like, let's go, let's lean into it. Step into your power. That would be mine.
Yeah, because the predictive index they always lead with, if you have a business problem, you have a people problem. And HR, they're the base. They're the base of every business's success.
I love it. Well, we're leaning into humanity, and hope it's not unrecognizable in a bad way, but a great way. Like, I love the vision you've got there, Francesca. Well, everyone's got to go listen to Your Work Friends podcast. Check out the website and, of course, start to follow you both on LinkedIn. Thank you both for being on the podcast. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks, JP.
Thanks, Ricky.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Mel and Francesca for sharing their insights and research about workplace relationships and for having me on their Your Work Friends podcast. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and business impact. And if you go to Future of HR and subscribe, you'll also be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from 100-plus thought leaders that's simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. We'll be back next week with another amazing guest, Cole Napper. Cole is currently the VP of Research Innovation and Talent Insights at Lightcast. He's the co-host of Directionally Correct, one of the top people analytics podcasts, and now he's a new author, and we'll be discussing his new book, People Analytics, Using Data-Driven HR and Gen AI as a Business Asset. This is a great conversation and one you will not want to miss. Thanks again for being part of our Future of HR community.